So, for example,
actually, Umberto Beck, we'll have to leave it there, but we're also going to do an interview in Spanish at democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
And you were listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Challenging the Both Sides Narrative, Difference Between Fascist and Antifa Movements in the Trump Era, on Thursday, April 4th from 7 to 9 p.m. at Cider Riot in Portland. Challenging the Both Sides Narrative is a talk by Dr. Stanislav Vysotsky. This talk will provide an overview of contemporary fascist and anti-fascist movements with a focus on the key differences between them. Again, that's Challenging the Both Sides Narrative, Difference Between Fascist and Antifa Movements in the Trump Era, on Thursday, April 4th from 7 to 9 p.m. at Cider Riot, 807 Northeast Cooch Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Zenith's Tar Sands Oil Expansion Community Forum on Friday, April 5th, from 6:30 to 9 p.m. at the City of Portland Water Pollution Control Laboratory in Portland. Second in a series of community forums on Zenith Energy's Tar Sands Oil Export Expansion, this event will supply project background, climate justice impacts, health and safety risks, and ideas for public action around Zenith's oil terminal. A variety of perspectives will be presented. Again, that's the Zenith's Tar Sands Oil Expansion Community Forum on Friday, April 5th, from 6:30 to 9 p.m. at the City of Portland Water Pollution Control Laboratory, 6543 North Burlington Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, the Portland School Board has approved their contract extension.
A federal judge has denied the challenge to the expansion of the Cascade Siskiyou National Monument.
And in international news, Italy has refused entry to another charity rescue ship.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, April 3rd, 2019. I'm Erin J. Bernard.
And I'm Emily Gresham Beamer. Hundreds of Portland residents rallied at the City Town Hall budget meeting on Tuesday night. The room in the IRCO building of the Northeast Gleason Street was filled to capacity with about 250 people. Community members testified in front of the mayor and the city council about their frustrations over possible funding cuts. One of the biggest concerns is the possible closures under the proposed Parks and Recreation budget. The Portland Parks and Recreation Department is facing a $6.3 million budget gap in the next fiscal year. Each year, the department's costs grow and revenue from fees cannot keep up. The department is now proposing cuts such as reducing staff, cutting back on activities like summer camps and special events, as well as closing the Selwood Community Center. As of now, the plan is just a proposed budget, and there is still time for the public to weigh in. Mayor Ted Wheeler will not propose his final city budget until May, which still must be approved by the City Council in June.
Five Portland Water Bureau employees are suing the city for alleged discrimination and retaliation after they reported safety issues, wasteful practices, sexual harassment, and, quote, systemic corruption. The suit claims agency management allowed for a toxic environment that put employees and ultimately the public at risk. One part of the lawsuit alleges that a manager encouraged a novice employee with little experience to operate heavy machinery and then belittled other employees when they raised safety concerns. The suit also claims that a manager made crude and sexist jokes about one of the plaintiffs and women in general. The employees allege that when they reported the issues, they were either terminated, harassed, refused promotions, or ignored. It is unclear whether any of the five plaintiffs still work for the agency. The Water Bureau spokesperson, Jamie Cooty, has declined to comment as of Tuesday.
The Portland School Board has approved the contract extension negotiated early this year by the district's union representative in central administration. The extension provides district educators a 3% cost of living raise. However, the extension keeps in place controversial rules that require the district to empty a teacher's file of all complaints not proven through a series of due process hearings. This can include throwing out documents that could show a pattern of questionable conduct. As part of the contract negotiation, the union and board agreed to meet with a neutral mediator for at least 24 hours each month from now until the two parties can agree on how to improve that rule to better protect students as well as educators. In addition to providing a cost of living increase and setting up a framework for policy changes, the contract extension also allows for a full-time library assistant at each middle and high school in the district.
According to a report from the Annie E. Casey Foundation, foster youth in Oregon and across the nation are being placed with families more often. KBOO's Jonelle Ferretti has more in collaboration with Eric Tegedoff of the Oregon News Service.
More foster youth are being placed in families across the country, according to a new report. The Annie E. Casey Foundation says the proportion of kids in foster care who were placed with families rather than in group homes rose from 81% in 2007 to 86% in 2017. And Oregon fared even better. Numbers rose from 91% to 94% over that same period, which is among the highest rates in the nation. Chris Coughlin with Children First for Oregon says placement with a family or relative is important because removing a young person from their biological family is a traumatic experience.
Being in a family setting is the best place for healing to happen and to help children and youth have positive role models and positive connections with adults.
Coughlin says these meaningful connections are critical as kids age out of their foster care system. Research shows they're more likely to finish school and get jobs and less likely to become early parents. Last year, President Donald Trump signed the Family First Prevention Service Act, which prioritized family placement. Coughlin says Oregon is in the process of implementing this law. The report shows children nationwide are more likely to be placed with family related to them, growing from 25% to 32% in a decade. Rob Gein with the Casey Foundation says that has been an important development.
One of the main reasons why we're seeing this improvement is that states are placing more children with relatives. When a child can't live with their own birth families, a relative is always the first choice, and states are doing a much better job with that.
But he adds that progress has been slower for children of color and for teens. According to the report, 95% of children aged 12 and younger were placed with families in 2007, compared with 58% of kids 13 and older. For the Oregon News Service and KBOO Community Radio, I'm Janelle.
In a critical stance against the Oregon Department of Transportation's plan to widen I-5 in the Rose Quarter, ODOT's Rose Quarter Improvement Project would add at least two lanes to a 1.7-mile stretch across I-5. Udaly, the city's transportation commissioner, joins other organizations in calling for a more rigorous study of the project's potential environmental impact. Several important institutions, including the Portland Public Schools, the Albina Vision Trust, and Metro, all submitted comments to ODOT criticizing the project. They are concerned that expanding the highway would do further damage to the Northeast Portland's POC communities, and it would worsen the air quality, specifically at a middle school with a high racial minority population. The concerns also point to the fact that widening freeways has been shown to not actually reduce traffic or lower carbon emissions in the long run. Some of the organizations say that congestion pricing or strategically tolling roads during periods of increased traffic could be a better solution for the Rose Quarter. ODOT maintains that the project will be good for Portland's traffic and air quality problems, although independent studies and ODOT's own research refutes those claims. Udaly, along with other organizations, are now calling for ODOT to conduct an environmental impact statement that includes more research and public input than a regular environmental assessment. As of last week, ODOT has said they have yet to make a decision about whether to conduct the environmental impact statement.
Two men have been arrested following a series of beatings involving two homeless men living in Salem. Local law enforcement arrested 33-year-old Joseph Michael Sizemore and 23-year-old Brady Kanaga last week on charges of attempted murder, assault, robbery, and coercion. A Marion County judge has ordered that both men be held without bail. It has not yet been determined whether the men have hired attorneys.
A federal judge in Oregon has denied a timber company challenge to President Obama's expansion of the Cascade Siskiyou National Monument. President Obama expanded protections to 47,000 acres of Oregon and California railroad lands in 2017, just days before leaving office. These so-called ONC lands were originally congressionally designated for timber production, with the profits going to local counties and schools. However, Magistrate Judge Mark Clark found there was no conflict. Located in southwest Oregon and northwest California, the monument was first protected by President Clinton in 2000 under the Antiquities Act as an ecological wonder known for its incredible diversity of species. A popular outdoor recreation area, the monument connects three ecoregions and is a biological corridor for Pacific fish, mule deer, gray wolves, and spotted owls. The rejected lawsuit was filed by Murphy Timber of Eugene. Two other lawsuits filed by timber interests in Washington, D.C. are still pending.
Earlier today, Trump again threatened to close the border, but would not definitively say whether he would do so. Trump plans to visit the Mexico border Friday in California, where some aides are bracing for a possible announcement. Shutting down the U.S. border with Mexico could halt all U.S. automotive manufacturing within a week, affecting at least 1 million jobs, according to Kristen Zizek, Vice President of Industry, Labor, and Economics at the Center for Automotive Research. Despite the logistical and economic concerns, White House aides have said this week that Trump is serious about closing the border, even if the exact timing remains uncertain.
Earlier today, the House Judiciary Committee authorized its chairman, New York Representative Gerald Nadler, to use a subpoena to try to force the Justice Department to give Congress a full copy of the Mueller report and all of the underlying evidence used in it. Nadler said he would not use the subpoena immediately, waiting to see how much of the report Attorney General William P. Barr releases on his own, and how soon. The committee also approved subpoenas for five former White House aides who Democrats said were relevant to its investigation, including former White House counsel Donald McGahn and Trump's former chief strategist, Steve Bannon. Last week, Barr wrote to Nadler and other congressional leaders expressing his intent to give Congress a redacted version of the report by mid-April. Barr said he would not share it with the White House before then. Nadler said, quote, "Congress is entitled to all of the evidence. This isn't just my opinion. It is also a matter of the law."
KBOO programming is made possible by KBOO member listeners and support from the Oregon Symphony's Concert for the Community, Saturday, April 13th. Celebrating music of the Americas with music of North, Central, and South America. Featuring performance by Hillsborough's Mariachi Una Voz. More information at orsymphony.org.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast at 5:30 for news from the Boo. Then at 6, it's Kitchen Table Conversations. At 7, we're Keeping It Real. Tonight's weather will be mostly cloudy with a low of 46 degrees. Tomorrow's weather offers cloudy skies, a 50% chance of rain, and a high of 61 degrees. Today in history, the American Civil Liberties Union announces it will defend Allen Ginsberg's book Howl against obscenity charges. After the U.S. Customs Department seized some 520 copies of the book as it entered the U.S. from England, American publisher and poet Lawrence Ferlinghetti, who recently celebrated his 100th birthday, published the book, was arrested, tried, and found not guilty. The quote of the day is the opening line of Ginsberg's Howl. I saw the best minds of my generation destroyed by madness, starving, hysterical, naked, dragging themselves through the streets at dawn, looking for an angry fix. Angel-headed hipsters burning for the ancient heavenly connection to the starry dynamo in the machinery of night. In an open audit published today, a cohort of artificial intelligence researchers expressed concern over law enforcement's use of Amazon's facial analysis software, Recognition. The letter, signed Concerned Researchers, included the names of 38 university professors, Google and Facebook employees, and other AI experts. Their goal is to bring attention to a recent study conducted by Inalua Debra Raji and Joy Buolamwini, in which they tested Amazon's facial surveillance and facial recognition on African Americans. The study showed that Amazon's recognition software has high risks of creating a situation of mistaken identity due to the program's higher error rates when classifying the gender of darker-skinned women and by completely neglecting people who are non-binary or only providing a male and female category. Currently, Oregon's Washington County Sheriff's Office is the only known agency using the software. The letter requests that Amazon stop selling their software to law enforcement because it is unsafe to use technology that is, quote, simplistic without accounting for the social complexity.
U.S. health officials are investigating whether electronic cigarettes may trigger seizures in some people who use the nicotine vaping devices. Regulators stress that it is not yet clear whether vaping is responsible. However, they added that they are concerned and encouraged the public to report information about the issue. The FDA received 35 reports between 2010 and 2019 of people suffering seizures after vaping. The agency is seeking details about vaping brands and models and whether users who have experienced problems were also taking medications, supplements, or other drugs. The FDA is asking consumers to report unexpected health or safety issues with any tobacco product by visiting their online safety reporting portal at safetyreporting.hhs.gov.
In reaction to last year's mass shooting at the Tree of Life Synagogue, where 11 were killed and 7 more wounded, the Pittsburgh City Council has passed a package of controversial gun laws, which Mayor Bill Peduto is expected to sign. The legislation places restrictions on military-style assault weapons, like the AR-15, and bans most uses of armor-piercing ammunition in high-capacity magazines. It also allows the temporary seizure of guns from people who are determined to be a danger to themselves or others. Pennsylvania law blocks cities from regulating guns, but Pittsburgh officials claim they have found a loophole by prohibiting the use of such weapons, not the possession of them.
And now it's time for today's report from National Native News, the daily newscast dedicated to Indigenous news, issues, and culture. On today's episode, a grassroots group creates the Nebraska Indian Child Welfare Coalition. The Navajo Nation announces clean energy development as its priority, and Indigenous Peoples Day becomes an official holiday in New Mexico.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A grassroots group formed the Nebraska Indian Child Welfare Coalition to increase work on child welfare issues. Misty Frazier is executive director. She says they developed into the new nonprofit to expand education, advocacy, and to help keep Native families together. Frazier says the need is great in Nebraska, where Native American children are disproportionately represented in the child welfare system.
We're still hearing a lot of the same things, like there are relatives that are able and willing to take the children, but, you know, they go through all of the processes that they need to go through, background checks, home studies, and all of that, but they're still not able to get their children sometimes, or maybe they have the children and then they get removed from them and they get placed outside of the home for whatever reason and they're not told why, you know, miscommunication, and there's still a lot of mistrust for the system, so a lot of families feel like they're not treated fairly. They're not heard, maybe not understood in court. For tribes in rural areas, access to services is really tough.
The coalition hosts listening sessions and trainings on foster care and the Indian Child Welfare Act. This month, the group will hold a convening with local national experts to discuss possible implications of the case Brackeen versus Bernhardt. The case challenges the decades-old Indian Child Welfare Act. The law is intended to keep Native children with Native families.
The biggest implication is losing ICWA in the protection for Native children and families. That is so extremely detrimental, and so not having that added protection for Native children and families, but there's still going to be a need. Our children are still going to have, and families are still going to have that need for services, and so it's scary. It's very, very scary.
Tribes and Indian child welfare workers across the country are closely watching the case. The case and a number of other issues are being focused on at the National American Indian Conference on Child Abuse and Neglect held this week in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Leaders of the Navajo Nation signed a proclamation Tuesday declaring clean energy development as the tribe's priority. Leaders say they will pursue clean, renewable energy development on Navajo land. Navajo Nation President Jonathan Nez spoke at the signing ceremony in Window Rock, Arizona.
This is a big move for the Navajo Nation. But as I said in Navajo, that this is nothing new to us as indigenous people, right? Being stewards of the land, taking better care of our land, using what the Creator has given us in terms of natural resources.
Navajo land has long been impacted by uranium and coal mining. The tribe plans to focus on solar projects. The move comes after the Tribal Council recently voted to drop its bid to acquire the coal-fired power plant on Navajo land, which is set to close this year. Indigenous Peoples Day will officially replace Columbus Day in New Mexico. Governor Michelle Lujan Grisham signed a bill Tuesday which renames the holiday. The second Monday in October will honor the contributions of Indigenous people. A pottery exhibit at the Art Institute of Chicago is being postponed after concerns it lacked Indigenous voices, the Associated Press reports. Some of the pottery which was to be displayed is said to be from New Mexico grave sites, which are not art. The exhibit was set to open in May. The Art Institute acknowledges more work needs to be done to include Native voices in the project. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Italy's far-right interior minister has refused entry to 64 refugees and asylum seekers that were rescued off the coast of Libya by a German nonprofit ship. Interior Minister Matteo Salvini says the rescue ship, like others before it, was not welcome in Italy. Sea-Watch, a German nonprofit that rescued the refugees, says they intervened after government authorities failed to answer a call for help from a sinking rubber boat. According to the group, the people rescued included 5 children and a newborn baby. Sea-Watch added that they are still searching for 50 more people who remain missing. Both Italy and Malta have refused to accept rescue ships operated by humanitarian groups in the Mediterranean. Because of this, many boats that pick up refugees are forced to return them to Libya, where the United Nations say they face trafficking, kidnap, rape, and torture. According to the United Nations, in 2018 alone, 2,262 people died at sea while trying to reach Europe.
The Washington Post has reported that the 4 children of murdered journalist Jamal Khashoggi have been given million-dollar houses and monthly 5-figure payments by Saudi Arabia as compensation for the killing of their father. According to the Post, Saudi Arabia is trying to come to a long-term understanding with the Khashoggi family to encourage them to continue to refrain from criticism in relation to their father's killing by Saudi agents. Saudi operatives killed Khashoggi, a Washington Post contributor and well-known critic of the Saudi government, on October 2nd last year at the Saudi consulate in Istanbul, Turkey, where he had gone to collect documents for his planned wedding. Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman has been accused of ordering the killing, but the kingdom has rejected the claim. A Saudi official told the Post that the payments are in line with the long-standing Saudi custom of providing financial assistance to victims of crime, and it is not in any way an admission of guilt.
The houses given to the children are located in the city of Jeddah, in a compound where their eldest brother, Salah Khashoggi, lives. Salah Khashoggi says he plans to remain in Saudi Arabia with his family, while the other three children live in the U.S. and are expected to sell their new properties.
The Chinese government has announced a ban on all forms of the powerful narcotic fentanyl, effective May 1st. The synthetic drug has powerful opioid properties, up to 100 times stronger than morphine. Fentanyl was responsible for the deaths of nearly 30,000 Americans in 2017, according to the CDC. The drug is primarily produced in China, although the Chinese government previously banned specific strains of the deadly drug. Manufacturers in China have continually synthesized novel strains, avoiding each new ban. This practice allowed for the drug's wide illicit distribution within the United States, despite the Chinese government's official bans on several fentanyl strains. The latest blanket ban on fentanyl would make all forms of the drug officially controlled substances in China, closing past loopholes to the government's ban. Many critics fear enforcement in China may prove to be nearly impossible due to the drug's small but potent nature.
Up next, KBOO News poet Dan Raphael needed a spring tune-up.
It's like my mechanic takes my car's engine apart and tells me he'll rebuild it in 2 years. The mechanic is such a media darling, I worry he'll be in business 6 more years, though he doesn't seem capable of fixing anything, and he says if I try another mechanic, he'll build a wall across the freeway. Trump and the Republicans took Obamacare apart, have no desire to provide health care, and want us to hold our breaths and trust them. They say cutting food stamps will help us lose weight and avoid unhealthy junk food. It so depresses me, this helplessness, this rage with nowhere to go. Last weekend, all I could see was dark, wet January. Spring's flowers were invisible to me. I wore 2 coats in 70-degree sunshine. It only took a couple hours with a couple friends to put on a t-shirt and see the spring blossoming around me. A mental health solution no plan covers that's available to almost everyone. For Poetic Justice, this is Dan Raphael.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, April 3rd, 2019. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call us with your breaking news stories and tips at 503-231-8032. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Yasmin Kobanoglu, Janal Ferretti, and Dan Raphael. The producer is Yasmin Kobanoglu, and engineer is Tammy Habteus. Interim Director of Evening News and Public Affairs is Lisa Loving. A podcast and transcript of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220OHR Hood River on 90.9 FM. I'm Emily Gresham Beamer.
And I'm Erin J. Bernard. Coming up tomorrow morning on KBOO. At 7, it's Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez. At 8 on Voices from the Edge, host Commissioner Joanne Hardesty takes a look at understanding the City of Portland budget process and takes your call. At 9, Press Watch, Teresa Mitchell's weekly look at the news you're not supposed to know. More great programming. At 9:30, Fight the Empire host Per Fagerang talks about Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. and the role of the deep state. At 10, it's Flashpoints. At 11 on Between the Covers, host David Naiman talks to Pulitzer Prize and National Book Award finalist Christine Schutt about her latest story collection, Pure Hollywood. And at 11:30, it's Black Book Talk. All of these KBOO programs are made possible by members' support. If you'd like to become a member, go to kboo.fm and click on Donate.
Bye. some labels to put on to this thing we keep and dip into when we need. And I don't have the right to ask where you go at night, but the waves hit my head to think someone's in your bed. Just lost the world war, and the scene slips away to the evenness I fake. It's a sheet of